All right, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Free for All right here on Grumblings Media. I am your host, Big John, and joined, of course, by my co-host. I don't know how he's going to show up on the screen, but I'm going to point down because that's where I see him, Mr. Hody Johns. Hody, how you doing, Hode man?
I'm doing great, Big John. How you doing today?
And I see you're able to recover from still wearing that Broncos hat with pride, despite them bowing out ahead of the Super Bowl. So I commend you on your resilience and your ability to carry on in the face of defeat, sir.
If we want to measure resilience, let me go ahead and switch my hat out real quick because I got a Rockies hat right here.
Okay, there you go.
This one, I love my boys even in the offseason, even when they're bad. So I am not a fair weather fan.
So you just went from resilient to optimistic, and that's good enough too. I can deal with that. But, Hody, thanks once again, my sidekick here tonight. Both of us, though, are very happy to say that our guest tonight is Mr. Lars Mapstedt. Lars was a candidate for the LP nomination for president in 2024. More than that, he's an activist for the party, for the Liberty Movement, for the Libertarian Party. And generally, just like a guy that you feel good talking to, he's not a downer. He doesn't bring people down. He's a positive dude. He's got solutions. He's got visions. And we're going to talk all about that tonight. Lars, how you doing, sir?
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me on. It's been a little bit here. I forgot you're a big sports guy.
Yeah.
Now that I see this banter here, you like financial markets or something like that too. You were
back in the day. Yeah, I was a Wall Street guy back in the day. I know that for some libertarians, it's kind of weird now that you brought that up. You would think that most libertarians might be deferential to Wall Street, that they might view it as a positive, but there's still that mistrust. Wouldn't you say, guys, that libertarians, like if you bring up Wall Street to them, they might sneer a little bit. What do you think, Lars?
Yeah, I think, it just kind of, maybe because of the crony capitalism, because we don't actually have free markets. And so there's a little bit of that. And, you know, there's always this like kind of stick it to the man,
right.
Big money is not got our best interest at hand. And it's more a class thing, I think. And, you know, I certainly, having grown up really poor with, you know, in a goat barn with an outhouse and no electricity, and then becoming financially successful, I hear it all the time is like, you know, the evil Wall Street people keeping me down, the rich people keeping me down. And, I grew up, my family, sort of have that bias, right? Like the rich people lived over there. You're eating government cheese. You're not the rich people. We right. mow their lawn. Then when I finally was successful, I came to the understanding that like, you don't reach some magic dollar amount and suddenly become a jerk, right? You're like, I have $999,000. If I get one more dollar, I'm a millionaire and I'm an ass, right? Like and then I get a secret book to keep the little people down, right? Like it's just crap. And so it's like, there's bad rich people and there's bad poor people and there's good rich people and there's good poor people. And it's like, I tend to judge people just on their actions and how they behave rather than what they look like or what, you know, any of that kind of stuff. I think that's the beauty of libertarianism is like, I let people just do their own thing. And, you know, as long as they're not hurting me or taking other people's stuff, I'm pretty chill with them, you know?
I know. And let me throw out another plug out there since we're all in a good mood here and talking real nice flow here. If you haven't caught my full-length interview with Lars, which was done last year on the Big Questions with Big John, I think we went close to an hour, maybe hour 15. Lars recounted his upbringing, like he mentioned, sort of a rags-to-riches story, his outlook on life, how he approaches not just the financial markets, but also his background in technology and just growing up in California. And it's really a great story. If you haven't caught that, just head on over to Grumblings Media. Check it out, the episode with Lars on Big Questions. That was one of my favorite episodes to record. Okay, but let's get on to it. Oh, and before we start, very quickly, the comments start. Archie says, hey, folks. Hey, Archie, how you doing? Glad you're joining us tonight. So always want to acknowledge the folks who took the time to listen. So let's get a little bit into why we're talking tonight. That was weird. We had a little bit of static there. But okay. In recent weeks, I would say, the LNC and the Libertarian Party as a whole, to a lesser extent, have been in a little bit of turmoil. Lots of goings on. On this show, specifically, we did have Jake Porter and Liberty Sentries. They came on. They told us about the allegations of corruption with the chair and with her life partner and potential embezzlement. I want to be careful. Allegations of embezzlement. I want to be careful with my words here. In fact, this past weekend on Sunday, if you were interested enough, there was a four-hour LNC meeting that was streamed by the LP Alliance. By the way, if you ever want to reach out and join a movement of different caucuses, coalitions, and flavors of libertarianism under one roof, I recommend the LP Alliance. Check them out. But during this meeting, lots of going on, lots of inside baseball guys when it came to Libertarian Party politics. In the end result, Justin Amash was rumored that they were trying to draft him to become the LNC right before the meeting, or just as the meeting started, word came that he was respectfully declining the opportunity to run for chair. That left two folks, Michael Heiss, the chair of the Mises Caucus, and Angela McCardle's named successor, she's the one who recommended him that he take, that the board replace her with Heiss. And Stephen Nekala, I believe it's pronounced. I'm having a little trouble with the gentleman's last name. I apologize. He's out of Florida, also of the Mises Caucus, but not viewed as being aligned necessarily with Angela McCardle and Michael Heiss. So he ended up winning 9-6, which means that six Mises board members voted not to elect their caucus leader, Michael Heiss. A lot of, I don't want to use the word shenanigans, but again, a lot of backroom deals in the course of the meeting. You saw a lot of parliamentary moves taking place. If you're just someone who loves the, what was that Netflix series with Kevin Spacey? I forget the name right now. But if you want it, if you're like that backroom politicking stuff, you saw plenty of it just during that meeting. Now, one of the interesting things is because the LP Alliance was live streaming it, you had people like Lars, you had people like Cody, you had people like me in the comment section doing sort of live live questions, live commentary, which at times was hilarious and at times was pointed. So before we get to Lars, Hody, I know you're interested in this thing, House of Cards. Thank you, Archie. It was House of Cards on Netflix, so with Kevin Spacey. But Hody, give me a little bit of what you thought of what happened at the LNC meeting. And take it any way you want. What struck you the most? Was it the politicking? Was it the backroom dealing? Was it the procedural attempts to get one candidate over the other installed? Before we go to Lars, I just want to get your feeling about it. What was your perspective on that?
Yeah, I mean, it was a 4-hour, 13-minute meeting, as always, if you tune into libertarian stuff. If you are an activist like Lars is or myself, it is boring, heinously boring. If you are like on the political side and you love minutes and you love measures and stuff, like if you're a lawyer-minded person, fascinating stuff, right? So like, and I know that Big John, that kind of stuff interests you when you say, what's this shenanigans, what's this intrigue going on
here? Yeah.
I will give it to you my opinion from the opinion of an activist. And what I saw is I'll admit I was a little troubled. I am not a big fan of the LPMC or their tactics. And when Nekala, during his portion of the interview, was like, hey, Adrian Maligon's going to be like what he said, like incremental or integral, like crucial to his building strategy. And the LPNH comms team does like a great job. And that's something that he'd like to mimic. It was not feeling good, right? Like not big on that. But I mean, at least he was able to identify real, I have no problem saying it, embezzlement, not disclosing funds to where they were going, not playing above board. The Libertarian Party, we are all about how you don't need law to tell you how to behave appropriately. So right, if you morally, need a rule to tell you that you say, oh, I need to disclose that I'm giving money to my domestic partner and we're getting like super terrible results, then, you know, then maybe the Libertarian Party's not for you, or libertarianism isn't for you. Right. But then we go to Michael Heiss, and that to me is where things just very quickly fell off. I mean, he said Angela had been doing a good job. He bragged about the membership and money numbers that he had been getting for them he is actually still paid to be doing that for the Libertarian Party, getting right. membership, getting, you know, driving in money. The board appropriately noticed he wasn't doing a good job. Michael Heiss accused them of being like CNN. He was like, much like this LNC, it's
he
like
turned on
a bunch of jerking around. Here's the thing about the LNC from the Libertarian Alliance, as you noticed, as you talked about earlier, Big John, they're breaking this down. They're like, you've got 9 current LPMC members on there. You've got 3 former, 2 left on good terms, 1 not on good terms. You own this LNC, and you are over here saying like, no, this board stinks. I really thought the direction was actually going to go towards Michael Heiss, just because Nikayla seems so, like, if you're going to go diet MC, why not just go full Mises caucus? But when Heiss was unwilling to answer about if what Angela did was wrong on any level, because he said it was libel, which he should learn the difference between slander and libel, but whatever. And then he said that Angela did a great job getting behind Chase Oliver, that she's done an amazing job and he's done an amazing job driving right. the numbers.
Terrible. So it was a weird sort of strategy, wouldn't you say, Lars? And I see you chuckling, and I know why you're chuckling. You're an entrepreneur. It's like, let's do something. Let's change it. Let's try it out. If it works, great. If not, let's go to the next thing, right? So like Hody alluded to, those four hours and 13 minutes probably were like a slow enhanced interrogation technique for you. But talk to me a little bit about what you saw as an activist, as someone, like at one point, I had a laugh out loud, literally a laugh left my mouth, where in the thing where they were debating whether they had the funds to investigate themselves, you just chirped up and said, I'll pay for the whole thing. I'll pay for an investigation. As long as we get it done right, I'll pay for an independent investigation of these allegations. So yeah.
I said I would donate to it. I wouldn't pay for it. I was throwing out a few, you know, I've had my own companies audited, like when I've sold companies or when we were going public, the audit was, I mean, insane. You know, and the audit was, you know, $400,000 for the audit, right? Now, I'm not saying that the LP audit would be that much money, but, you know, I think that given all the stuff that's gone on over the last couple of years, you know, I'm all about openness, transparency, especially in organizations that I'm, you know, a member of or donor to. I don't want to be, you know, I don't want to be donating the stuff that is not on the up and up, right? Like, I want to make sure that everything's legit. And I'm not even going to wade into like, did this thing happen? Did that thing happen? Is this a bad thing? Because I'm not a lawyer. I'm not the judge. What I'd like to see is I'd like to see all this in the open air. I'd like all the sunshine to be shined on all this stuff, and let's get it out in the open instead of like, playing armchair judge or jury or executioner. Let's just get it out in the open. Let's find out what the real situation was. And that's why I was saying I would be open to an audit, because I feel like that is the best way to open the books, to open everything up. Because what, you know, if there's some, you know, smoke of impropriety, who knows what other things are going on, and not just with one person, but maybe other people are doing so. Because if you're, you know, I've been a board member of many things. I'm a board member of several, you know, things right now. And you have a fiduciary duty to your donors, to your board, to the, you know, to the people that are supporting you and all that kind of stuff. And you kind of have a higher level of duty than you do if you're just like a regular member of the party or something like that, right? And so I just feel like if you're on the LNC right now, you would want to clear the room. You'd want to clean it up and make sure everything's so that you can go. How can you go fundraise if you're right. like, well, there might have been some shenanigans going on, but we're not really sure because we can't afford an audit. So, but give us some money so we can do the thing. And you're like, it doesn't give me warm fuzzies. Right. And, you know, I mean, regardless of what your, caucus is or political, whatever is going on, for me, I look at the financials of the LNC. Right. And because I'm a business person, I do a lot of investments. Right. I look at businesses all the time. And I've looked at a lot of startups and, you know, big companies and IPOs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, if you showed me the financials of the LNC right now and said, Lars, you want to invest in this thing? I'd be like, this is a bankrupt company. What are you talking about right now? Unless there's some mega massive turnaround, right. You can just look at the charts of membership and donations and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know how you can paint any rosy picture about it. Right. You could have said, well, we have, you know, there was a lot of things of why things were going down. Right. Well, the CRM was busted and we were double counting people and we were counting people in this bucket and they weren't in that bucket. You know, donations aren't coming in because of X, Y, and Z. Donations aren't coming in because Kennedy is taking up all the room. Donation, like, whatever. There was just so many, you know, excuses of why the numbers are declining. And I don't really care about any of that stuff. What I care about is a robust libertarian party that can kick ass, win elections, and change America for the better. This is not the organization that's doing that right now. Like the money right. and the direction it's going is not going to get me to where I want to go. And the whole reason I'm a member of the Libertarian Party is to run candidates, win elections, and affect change in America. That if we're not doing that, then I'm going to go do something else.
No, I hear you. And honestly, if we have someone like you who's in the party, who's expressed interest in liberty, if we can't draw you in and people like you and people who you can reach out like as a network, you know, as a degree of separation, then that's troubling. And like you said, perhaps it's not. Look, I've said it all along. My pal Hody here is an anarchist. I'm more of a classical libertarian, right? Guess what? We agree on what, Hody? 90, 95% of things. Maybe it's the last 5% of that road that we don't align on. But guess what? If that's all Hody and I have to worry about is that last 5%, I'm happy. Yep. Do you know what I mean? I couldn't care less.
That's right. I say, like, get on the train together and, you know, you're going to get off after 9 miles and 10 miles is the end of the track. Like, you're just going to have a great time riding that train for 9 miles. And let me tell you, it's going to take your entire life to get to mile three. It doesn't matter. You know, it don't matter.
Yeah, like, you're right.
Let's move in that direction. And I, you know, I said that on the campaign a lot is like there's like the North Star. The North Star is like we don't have government and it's a voluntary society. Right. We're like, but like you don't wave a magic wand and go from here to there. You got to take incremental steps. And I can already hear Hornberger yelling at me that, you know.
Old Jacob's got his. He's got. Look, I appreciate that North Star that you said, right? Because I catch myself. You know, in the Grumblings Media offices, you'll hear a lot of these debates, Lars. I'll tell you right now, my partner, William, he's like, he's more of a conservatarian. He's like, no. Cut deals. Compromise on some of your principles if it means getting two extra local officials elected. And, you know, have your red line that you're not going to cross. You know, I tend to agree with that, except for the cases where, but I think we have to define what our red line is, right? Rather than agree on, hey, this is what we think is utopia, right? Whether it's a stateless society, a minarchist society, whatever. I think our red line should be, what are we not willing to do?
Yeah, I think
in you our guys, compromise.
I think you guys just kind of hit the nail on the head, and you just solidified it for me. And I've been kind of saying that, like, I almost feel like the LNC shouldn't have a platform. That Big John wants to run for office, and he's got his ideas of what libertarianism is, and he wants to go affect change in his county or his town, and he runs on his platform of whatever it is that he's doing. And Hody, he's got another idea of the things that he wants to do, and he's running in his town doing what his thing is, right? And right now, you guys are boxed in by the platform of the party. And we're all going to sit here and argue back and forth about what that platform should be. And we're never going to come to agreement on it. And I almost say, screw it. Just get rid of the platform altogether. Let the candidates sing their message. And if their message resonates with the people and the people elect those people, then, you know, then we're good. And if you're, you know, in one town, you know, it's like a Democrat and a Republican are different in different states, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
you know what I mean? A Republican in California is not the same as a Republican in Ohio, right? Like it's just not the same.
Absolutely. And or in Texas, you're right. Yeah.
And libertarians aren't going to be the same thing, right? And I think a lot of the infighting we have is literally just around ideology of what the platform should be. And I kind of pitched this idea of an independent political party, where there's no platform and it's just to get ballot access for people and run candidates and like, let's affect change. Right. And so I think there might be a little bit of something there that we're a little bit too ideological and we should just be like moving forward with actual change. Right. Like we all, everybody on this call and everybody watching this call, I guarantee you believes that we should have less government than we do today.
I agree with you, but I'm going to push back a little bit. Hody, help me out here because I want to phrase it the right way. I agree with you that I'm intrigued by your concept, but I don't know if it's so much as an absence of a platform, but maybe stating what I think we all are not, right? So, for example, all joking aside about who's a real libertarian, let's put that aside. There's so many hack jokes about that, right? But what I mean by that is like, hey, you really can't call yourself a libertarian if you believe in preemptive war. I'm picking out a simple one, right? You can't call yourself a libertarian, or you are not allowed to brand yourself as a member of the Libertarian Party without a platform, even if we go by your sort of thing, Lars. But we could say, for example, libertarians don't believe in war. Libertarians don't believe in sending U.S. tax dollars to foreign countries. Whatever we can agree on, why don't we start out with that? Because I think that's what we can all coalesce around. Like the other stuff is, you know, I don't know, Hody, what do you think? Do you think that's workable? Or do you think this idea that Lars is pitching, which is just, hey, the sole function of the LP on the national level is make sure that anybody who wants to has ballot access in the state they're living in.
That's the one. That's the one. To me, if I could have a magic wand and change the LP into what I think would be the right thing, it's literally to maintain ballot access, get ballot access, and to formulate enough of a structure so that we can attract really good candidates all over the country and be advocating for better rules and ability for more candidates to come. Because I don't feel like that the party yelling into the wind or the party yelling at media or whatever is going to change anything. That like it's, we have to get people in office that are going to affect change in the direction that we want to have happen. And so to me, I know there's a big argument about this that like, you know, is the party to run candidates and win elections? And that's the camp that I'm in. And some people are like, it's about ideology and changing the ideas of America and pushing the Overton window. But I feel like we do that anyway. It's like, I feel like the, you know, a lot of people say the Libertarian Party doesn't have any wins under its belt. It hasn't done anything in 50 years or whatever. And I totally disagree with that because I don't think that if we hadn't been pushing on legalizing marijuana and legalizing drugs for the last 50 years, that would be anywhere in the talk, you know, in the universe. Right. And I'm going to tell you right now, I never thought in my lifetime we would hear a president of the United States utter the words, I think we should abolish the IRS. What are you talking about right now? What, like, oh, don't get me so excited, right? And I know that it's not going to happen, but just the fact that a president is saying we should abolish the IRS means the Overton window has shifted. And let me tell you, there ain't been any other party or any other group of people calling for abolishing the IRS for as long as we have. So we are the direct reason why that is happening. And I can go on and on and on about different ways that we have affected change in the Overton window. And so I feel like, you know, never feel like you're not doing something in the Libertarian Party, because you are.
That's a great point. And Hody, I know you've mentioned this before, but why don't you give us your perspective? Because I know you're someone who has staunchly said, like, hey, every time libertarians capitulate on their message, every time libertarians capitulate on their principles, bad things happen. But when we stick to our principles, we get legalized marijuana. We get gay marriage being legalized. We're talking about abolishing the IRS, even if someone's saying replace it with an ERS. But I won't nitpick too much. But but you know what I mean. So, Hody, talk to me a little bit about that, because I know that from your perspective, you're really into that, right? Like making sure that we don't bend on what we view are our principles as libertarians.
Yeah, historically, there is almost no case to be made for the idea of capitulating to get what you want. It didn't work with slavery when the abolitionists sold out. That was something that was paid for in blood by posterity, you know, because they weren't willing to fight it out then. It didn't work out for the Libertarian Party. So Lou Rockwell and Murray Rothbard, when they tried the paleo strategy, you know, to bend the knee to the Republicans, right, and they made a list of demands and they made a list of things they were willing to capitulate on. The things they capitulated on, big government architecture, big government overseeing music, big government approving, you know, what gets produced and what doesn't. We successfully sold out on those things and government did get bigger. What was on our list? What were we supposed to get in return? Abolition of the IRS, abolition of income tax, end of foreign wars. None of that happened, right? Like we successfully sold out. We didn't get any of what we wanted in return. We got a lot of, you know, short-term things. I will bring this up now. And again, I am very pro Ross Ulbricht out of prison, but is it worth getting one man out of prison to declare a literal war by executive order against the exact things that Ross Ulbricht did? I mean, Kamala Harris would have made that deal. I'll let a tax offender go if I can like triple the size of the IRS and have your support to do it. Right. Like,
and have the death penalty for people who are convicted of the same crimes that Ross Ulbricht was convicted of.
Right.
The drug trafficking charges. So, yeah. To your point, you're right. And again, people think, you know, that's another thing I want to get into slightly, but very quickly from the comments, Linda Vizia says it should be both create a message for your values and get libertarians elected. And do you think that's thanks for your comment, Linda, like Lars, do you think that's easier said than done? Obviously. But I mean, do you think one flows is one higher up in the hierarchy than the other? So is it, yeah, we should do both ideally, but is it get libertarians elected first, then worry about messaging your principles, or is it the other way around? Now, I know you said you're not necessarily a purist, right? But
so here's the thing is like Hornberger, the reason I brought him up is because I really love campaigning with that guy because he was the embodiment of what you're talking about right now. Is like, He's been doing this so long, he just didn't give a crap. And he's like, I'm just here sticking to my principles. And you guys are all idiots because you're not like over here on this line with me. Right, and I mean, right. I respect that. Like, but I just feel like there's a different way to go that you do have to incremental. He's like incrementalism reformers, you know? But I just believe that that is the way that you have to go. But I think that he's spot on and I applaud him for not bending on his principles, right? And I feel like I'm pretty good at that too. Like I'm not willing to sell stuff out for a little gain over here or whatever, you know. And my social media kind of, you know, lays that out, and I get all the time like, oh, you know, you thank you for supporting all these things that Donald Trump loves. And then I'll start ripping him a new one on some other thing. And they're like, wait, you're not a supporter of Donald Trump. And I'm like, no, I'm a supporter of principles. And like, if he's doing the principle, then I'll back it. But if he's not doing the principle, then I'm going to tell him what a cuck he is. And the same thing with Biden. Right. And although Biden just was like he wasn't even there.
Yeah, so then he wasn't there. Really, right.
You can't even really yell at him. You were just yelling at the thing. But to the person that just commented, the idea is that the candidates would come forth with what their platform is. And then the thing is like most of the states, you go before the state and you get you endorsed by your state party, right? So if you come with a crappy platform that none of your state is going to like want, then they're not going to endorse you, right? If you come with a crappy platform to Libertarian Party convention and you pitch your platform and people are like, I don't even like that. And if, you know, the thing is you have to win over enough libertarians to get them to endorse you. So if you're pitching and you're getting 51% of the people, then that's probably the correct, you know, you've got enough platform that everybody approves of what you're doing. And so what I'm just saying is that like, by having this written platform, it puts everybody in a box. And the media immediately wants to talk about the things that you're not even talking about. They're like, well, it says right here on the Libertarian Party platform that you're, you know, they'll like bring up abortion or they bring up something. And like, you're not even there because you're focused totally on abolishing the IRS and you've got a plan to do these certain things. And you don't even want to talk about that stuff. But they're like, no, we got to talk about this because that's what your party says. So where are you on this? You know? Yeah. And it's like, I mean, that's like for my campaign, that's what I was trying to do was I was just trying to like set forth a very like narrow set of things that I wanted to accomplish. And I just felt like all the rest of that was a distraction. It's not like we're going to win the presidency. So like having all that little nuance is just not, it's not that important, right? It's more important right. to have a broad message that's going to appeal to a big group of people that's going to push the Overton window in the direction that we want it to go. I mean, for president, right? Like for local things, you know, that's not the same. For local things, you want people, and the issues are different, right? Like in a right, local absolutely. Thing, it doesn't matter what your position is on abortion because you're never going to have any place in legislation where you're going to do anything about that, right? So I think we get lost in all the fighting. And that's one of the things that just is not that appealing to me. Because I just want to do stuff, right? And I don't like right. the fighting was just like, oh, it's so, and it's just draining. Like we were saying before, it's like if you surround yourself with people who are negative all the time, then you become negative. And I like that's one of my keys to success is I surround myself with people that are kicking ass and like right. doing cool stuff, right? And if I come across toxic people, I don't engage with them. I just leave.
right. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, there's a great bit by Tom Segura. He says, whenever someone starts arguing with him, he just stops and says, you know what? I agree with you now. And he goes to watch people's faces just drop when he won't argue with them. Yeah. Like he goes, it's the best move. No, you've convinced me. I agree with you now. Hody, a lot of what Lars just said is reminiscent to me, at least. And I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but it's reminiscent of the campaign Howard Stern ran for governor of New York. When he joined the Libertarian Party in New York, he literally took over the party, the state convention over a weekend by busing all his fans up there, paying for their membership fee. Obviously, he won. And when the press engaged with him, like, hey, what's this Libertarian Party? Because back then it wasn't as high profile, I think, in the mid 80s. He almost followed the Lars blueprint, right? Because he basically said, all I want to do is legalize abortion and make sure that all highway work is done between midnight and 6 a.m. because that way I don't want any traffic on the way to the office from Long Island. And it was so like people look, if you knew him and you knew his humor, it was satire the whole way. But it resonated with a lot of people because he didn't engage with this, like, what's your stance on Israel? What's your stance on Palestine? You know, the PLO. What? He didn't care. He goes, two things, abortion and no traffic. That was it. He goes, that's what New Yorkers care about. That's what I want to do. Right?
Give the good stuff to the people. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's all he wanted. And if it wasn't for the fact that they were demanding disclosure of his finances, he would have, I don't think he would have won, but he would have stayed in the race and certainly affected the outcome. So Hody,
you just pushed a button for me. You know, because the thing is I came into that race and I was under the impression that you didn't have to disclose your financials. And then I started getting letters from the FEC and they're like, hey, where's all your stuff? And I'm like, what are you talking about right now? And they're like, oh yeah, if you get more than $5,000, you have to file this thing. And I'm like, well, these other people didn't do it. And it turns out, like, if you're running for president, you want to file to run for president on May 16th or later. You don't want to do it before, because if you do it later, then the election's over before you have to file your paperwork. But if you do it before, you're required to file this paperwork. So long story short, like a year and a half of these guys just going at me. And I told them, like, guys, I'm not winning. It doesn't matter what my money is. And it's a security risk for my family to post this out there in the universe of what my assets are. Like, go away. And so, you know, yeah, eventually they just, it's disappeared and whatever. But it was like, you know, we're going to find you. So anyway, I found one more agency. I want to abolish the FEC. It's it's used as a political tool. I just posted this. It's used as a political to suppress candidates and to basically put them under fear so that they get controlled, right? Like it's like mafia, because they don't apply the rules evenly. And I saw that today they fired the head of the FEC, and I was like,
let's go. Yeah, let's go. Let's do it.
I said, if you abolish it, she won't ever have to return to work because it won't be there.
Exactly. Hey, listen. Whenever I hear the abolishment, I'll give Trump credit where credit is due. As much as being a native New Yorker and despising Donald Trump my whole life, I will give him credit where credit is due. And if he manages to get rid of a lot of these extraneous federal agencies, I'm all for that. I'll give him his props. I'll give him his flowers, whatever you want to say. Because I go by the old Milton Friedman maxim. Like when he was interviewed about this 25, 30 years ago, he said, I have only 5 federal departments I would keep. And he rattled them off, like Department of Defense, Department of State. Saw that. It was at the Hoover Institute, right? Yep. Perfect. That's my North Star right now. As we get down to what Milton Friedman wanted 25, 30 years ago, I'm good with that. Hody, I pulled up some numbers so we could rattle this around on the LNC. I just wanted to give people a sense of, because there's a lot of people who are saying, well, has the LNC been successful since the Reno takeover? There's a lot of back and forth, you know, what's been going on and everything. I mean, and here's the thing, right? A lot of the pro Reno takeover folks are very good with media. Dave Smith, the LPNH to some weird, wacky way, right? But they have very good social media chops. So there's a lot of people who are saying, like, hey, did they do well? Is this really a coup against successful people? I went to all the different AI platforms and I queried this for hours, and this is what I was able to get. Membership decline. The month before the Reno takeover, 16,600 paying members. That's now at 13,500 as of December 2024, an 18% drop. The national vote for president, it was 1.2% for Joe and Spike in 2020, 0.7% for Chase Oliver. And certainly you can't blame that all on the LNC, but some of it obviously you can. Average donation in 2021, $87. Average donation in 2024, $52. Donor retention in 2021, 68%. In 2024, 41%. In other words, there's one more. Organizational stability. Three executive directors resigned during McCardle's tenure amid allegations of self-dealing and litigation costs. $189,000 spent on legal fees, 16% of administrative budget to address internal lawsuits. So by most metrics of how political parties are measured, by most KPIs, which I'm sure Lars is the numbers guy, much like myself, you look at KPIs, key performance indicators, and they're sort of like your stakes in the ground, Hody. Not good. Like, you can claim victories. They can claim victories like freeing Ross Ulbricht, right? Absolutely. They can claim some of those, the degree of which we can argue, right? But they got something under their banner. Talk to me, Hody, where is the LNC headed in terms of, A, is that faction of the Mises, within the Mises caucus, dead? Are they coming back? What are we looking for in 26? And do you feel we're back towards a sort of let's get things done, like Lars is saying, as opposed to let's figure out who we're going to bring the torches and the pitchforks for?
There's a lot of work that needs to be done. Nick went over a lot of it with you last week, Big John, when you talked with him. There's a lot of problems here, and it's more than just a couple tweaks away from a solution. Right. Activists felt really disappointed at the end of like the SAR work, campaign or regime or whatever they want to call it, at the end of SAR work. Tenure, right? And they're of course even more disappointed now, you know, based on the results that we're getting. Listen, Angela herself gave metrics that she wanted to hit and missed all of those metrics. Don't let her shift it into saying no, free Ross was the only metric. Every year she gave out these metrics, every year she missed them. Like if a baseball player tells you their goal is to hit 300 and they go from hitting 250 to 230 to 210, and then they say, well, but I helped the Dodgers win the World Series. That's better than the Astros, right? Because I was really bad against our division rivals, the Dodgers. And the world's better if the Dodgers win than the Astros. That's not the goal you said, right? Like, if you were honest, you would just say the goal is to help the Dodgers win. As a member of the Colorado Rockies, I can do that by playing pitifully and helping them win. At least be honest with your organization if that's your goal. I listed a couple of things. I'll go over them real briefly, but things that I need to see if this Libertarian Party is going to pull itself out of a ditch. First, as Lars said, full investigation, full exposure. We should be the most transparent political organization, not the least. We need to open up the public emails again that we got rid of. Clearly, these were not made public, private, in good faith, right? Like these, like way more transparency, full investigation within ourselves. If we're going to tell the world we're the ones you should trust running your lives, we need to run our own lives better, right? We need to strive to be more humanitarian. I'm going to split the difference with what you and Lars are talking about here. I love the idea of kind of getting rid of the platform and just having this idea of liberty, right? Like whatever it may look like. But we do need to make sure if I say there's a pizza party and somebody brings pizza with arsenic or a salad, to be like, hey, like I'm willing to get a little creative here. Like I'll debate with the lasagna guys if lasagna is a pizza. But as soon as you come up here and you serve an arsenic laden pizza and LPNH, you know, or you're serving a salad with like Donald Trump, I'm just like, the point was the pizza, right? So we do need to have some focus, right? I'm fine with abandoning the written code, as Jesus and Paul would say. It's not about the written code. It's about that spirit of the law. I'm fine to break the Sabbath to heal somebody. I'm fine with breaking the laws to make us better. I don't want to see somebody break the laws to make themselves rich. So we need to keep a humanitarian focus if we are going to allow ourselves to kind of navigate the laws a little more creatively. We can't forget why the LPMC took over. We needed bold messaging. We did not get it during COVID. It was there. I'm aware that people are going to give me the same three tweets. It should have been 100 tweets. I'm sorry, but like we needed bolder messaging. We didn't get it. We need to also understand that we can be bold in our messaging without becoming bigots. We need to be both economically and socially libertarian. I don't care if in your head, you just need to tell yourself, okay, today I'm going to post about economics. Today I'm going to post about social and just take turns or something like that. But you cannot let either of these two fall. We have had the social libertarians who ignore economics. They failed. We had the economic libertarians who ignored social issues. They failed. Libertarianism is a complete philosophy. It's not just simply a bunch of rules. It's an idea, right? It's a mentality. And that mentality includes freedom for everybody, whether it's economic and social. We also need to work on evangelizing people who aren't perfect. When we talk about this gatekeeping, I'm not interested in kicking people out, but we do need a system that says, oh, hey, sounds like you're a little bit racist. Let's maybe tweak that up before, like, you know, we let you in, or, you know, get you dressed in the, you know, dressed for the wedding, as they say. We'd love to have you participate. Let's get you in the right uniform, you know?
Hey, Hody, I'm sorry. I before you get to the last one, I have to jump in here. I have to jump in because I always view myself as being the worst of humanity. I'll be upfront with you. I don't think very much of the way my internal thought process goes. So I always like to take a step back and ask good people such as you and Lars to set me straight and see if I, you know what I mean?
I'm the same as you, bro. People had to spend an hour inside my brain. They would, like, no one.
Yeah. I hear you. But during that LNC meeting, when asked to lay out a strategy, and I don't mean to pick on Heist specifically, but I will for this case, because it goes into what you just said, Hody, right? At one point, when he talked about his strategy, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt, I actually downloaded the transcript, ran it through AI, said, give me context around this, which was at one point he said, we have to get back to making the party more engaging for white people. That's a quote. So I am trying to say, in the context of what was being said, I'm trying my best. What is the strategy there? Because I'm trying to figure it out. Like, the Libertarian Party is already overwhelmingly comprised of white people, like between 85 and 90%, depending on which study you read. Yeah. I've always thought we need more outreach to people of color, the Latino community, the gay community. They should be libertarians from day one, right? Like, nobody else has fought for the gay community as consistently and as long as the Libertarian Party. So I always pictured it going in the opposite direction. Reach out to the groups that, you know, like, just Republicans are doing a great outreach, and they just recently started under Trump, reaching out to the Black community, to the Latino community. What did you guys think of that statement from Heist? Like, I did a double take. I think in the chat I said, wait, did he just say what I thought I heard him say? Someone correct me. I don't know. Lars, what did you think about that?
You know, I heard it when it happened and people were saying it, and I don't know if I was really paying much attention to it or whatever, but then somebody, you know, redid the clip and I was like, did he misspeak there? Or like, was that I don't know. I would almost want to just ask him, like, did you misspeak there? Or was that like legit what you're saying? Because if it's legit what you're saying, that ain't cool.
Yeah. Right?
That's not going to fly for me. But if like, you know, I know after running for president that I made gaffes. I meant to say something else and it came out this, and it was like, oh crap, that just came out of my mouth. You know, so I think, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if on face value it is what he said it is, then that's not cool with me. I mean, I am not a bigot. I don't have any racist feelings towards anybody or any group of people. Like I said earlier, I judge people based on their actions to me and to other people, and I literally could give a crap what they look like or what other beliefs they have. You know, you can be completely politically opposite of me and I will respect you and I will have a good conversation with you about all the other things, because a perfect example, like, I do not agree with Jill Stein and Cornel West on politics. Like, I do not agree with those people on politics, but you know what? I debated those people and I talked to those people. And I actually respect them because I felt like they were the most authentic people. They literally believed what they were trying to, you know, these other politicians, they just tell you crap, anything to get you to vote for them. And these guys actually believe their shit. And so I, like, if you have principle, even if it's not the principle that I like, I mean, at least I can respect that you're holding to your principles, right? Like, I can respect that, you know? So I feel like, we just got to treat people with more respect, even when they don't have the same ideological belief system that we do, because how are you ever going to convince them that you're, like, I'm a big fan of attraction rather than promotion. Like, live your life how you want other people to, like, treat you and live their life. And if they see that you're doing a good job in your life, they might be like, you know what? That guy's doing it right. I'm going to do like that guy. Right. And when you're promoting stuff, it doesn't stick, you know, it doesn't stick.
It's inauthentic. Yeah. It's inauthentic.
Yeah, I want to live authentic. It's like, just be authentic.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. Hody, what did you think about that statement?
Yeah, F minus, it's as bad as it sounds. So when you say something like that, and you have the opportunity to walk it back and you don't, it just, it tells me everything about you. You know, when you have, right. He has had the opportunity to be like, hey, I didn't say that quite that's right. True. He's that's opted true. Not to. Okay. Like, I know where he's at, you know? Right. Here's the thing. I'm not against this as a concept. I don't want to not welcome white people into the party. Listen, I come from the public school system, and I remember learning badly about racism and how I was a racist and there's nothing I could do about that, right? Like, that's just inherent in my system or whatever. Not cool. Totally terrible way to teach kids, especially if you want them to fight against this Leviathan, right? Like, disheartening, disrespectful, not accurate, not true. So I understand what it's like as a white person to feel bad, right? But this perception is wrong. We have plenty of white people. As you mentioned, we had a literal white nationalist, white supremacist catch a hot mic moment for the world to see, talking about it openly in front of a mic, in front of people with no backlash. In fact,
you're talking about the national convention in D.C. is what you're referring
convention.
To.
Right. And so the whole world got to hear how does libertarians respond when you spout blatant white supremacist talking points in front of them? We clam up. We let it ride. We go, oh, yeah, ha, ha, ha. That sounds cool. Yeah, but black people have a lot bigger penises than everybody else. Cool, man. Ha, ha, ha. Like trying to joke around with them. We're jovial about it, right? Like, and this is not what can happen. Is a black person going to want, I mean, he said, like, I could line people up, by their intelligence according to their race?
It was horrible stuff. Right? Yeah, it was just abhorrent. But
what am I going to do to bring, like, black people in after that? And then the Asian people after he says all their dicks are small, right? Like, I'm not I'm burning these bridges with these people. And then I've got Michael Heiss over here being like, we're still not welcoming enough towards white people. No, Jeremy Kaufman hasn't gone far enough yet. It's like, no, you don't have the perspective. Here's the thing. The Libertarian Party just 30 years ago, I think, was like 81% atheist. There was a time we actually had to do real legitimate outreach to Christians, you know, and Muslims and Jews. We actually did successfully do those things. And it was necessary. You look at your demographics and you just say, like, hey, we're messaging some things that aren't landing quite right with those people. And as you mentioned, Big John, there is no reason a homosexual should be anything but a libertarian, right? Like, in this country. Like, that's a failure of messaging on our part if they are. And so what we need to do is say, okay, now that we recognize that we have a much lower percentage than we should, oh, let's maybe see why. Oh, hey, listen, look at our last presidential candidate and everybody, all the most popular social media accounts are calling him a F slur, right? Like, oh, okay. So maybe I can see why gay people aren't joining the Libertarian Party in droves, right? Like, that's a real problem here. Yeah. And so all this indicates, even if we don't want to say Michael Heiss is a bigot, he's got no perception. He is unqualified to make to assess values and where we are at the Libertarian Party. If he thinks the Libertarian Party is still scaring off white people, it's just not. It's not.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up, and I'm thinking to myself, I don't even think the Republicans would like the Republicans don't do anti-gay stuff. Like, you would never see a Republican congressman saying, like, if the Republicans nominated a gay president, you would not see any Republican senators being like, oh, you know, is this like, or, and for sure not Democrats. Right. But like, wow. I mean, that's interesting. It just shows that we don't hold ourselves, you know, to accountable, like you said, to a higher degree. I feel like when you're representing the party, you do sort of have to hold yourself to a higher standard than, you know, other people, because you're representing the group of people. You're representing the future. Like, let's say you leave tomorrow, whatever you say, if it's damaging the whole party because you were, you know, an idiot, then that's, you know, you're doing a disservice to all the people, not only that are currently there, but people that are going to be coming, you know, down the line. So you have to hold yourself to a little bit higher standard, I feel like.
And nobody in the party, or most people in the party not repudiating those types of statements also hurts, because it's like, okay, we can buy that there was a lone gunman who went off the reservation and said some stupid things. As long as we kind of get the impression that he or she is not representative of the party, you know, okay, we can excuse it, you know, but if the party stays silent on it under some weird interpretation of we support free speech, so we'll let people say stupid things and taint our brand, then that doesn't quite work with people either. Very quickly, Archie Flower, I think what he's referring to Michael Hayes, was thinking was he wanted to say both want and invite and ended up Freudian slipping. So I think that's an interesting little comment there. And then just to make sure we get his point, and I think my record of being anti-Heist shows I'm not providing cover for him. So he's trying to find a legitimate reason why we might give him the benefit of the doubt.
That was sort of my thing on it. But the point Odie was saying was if I had done that, then I would have come out and just said, sorry, I screwed up. And it sucks and it's embarrassing. You know, I mean, there was a couple of times on the campaign I said stuff and I was like, in life, I've said things sometimes and not known the full context of what it was. I remember posting a meme and like the people just got on me and they're like, what are you doing? You can't post that meme. Right. I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're like, no, it's very offensive to people. And I'm like, looking at them like, why? And they're like, you don't know what this character is. And I'm like, no. Right. And they're like, well, you just offended everybody. I'm like, oh, you know, that was not what I was trying to do. Like my intention of this thing was something totally different. And you have to be careful with memes because, you know, they get passed around and sometimes they have embedded hidden messages that you're not culturally aware of or whatever. And you might be, you know, be slinging some stuff that's not appropriate. But, you know, I think if you just own up to it and people know that you're not an idiot and you're not a jerk, then you can backpedal it. Right. But
right. Absolutely.
If you don't backpedal it, then it's kind of telling, isn't it?
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Okay, before we go, I just want to remind everyone, if you have any questions for Lars or Hody or myself, please feel free. Use the chat functions on YouTube, X, Rumble, Facebook, anywhere you're at. Just send it through to us. We'll get it. One of the things I wanted to talk about is, Lars, you're involved with this plan to try to expand ballot access in the U.S. And you had sent to me this graphic. I'm going to put it up on the screen. Hopefully we can make it bit bigger, and that's the ballot access index. So why don't you tell us about this, the More Voter Choice, I guess that's an initiative that you're involved with?
Yeah, it's sort of like a PAC. It's a, you know, it's an agency that is that's already been doing litigation and legislation. There's a number of lawyers involved. I've got Richard Winger, Ballot Access News is involved. We've got, you know, just a really rock star team of people. We've raised a significant sum of money. I put $100,000 of my own money into this, but we've gotten, you know, multiples of that in donations. And essentially, I came up with this ballot access index where we have like 25 criteria for each state. And then we rank the states in order based on those 25 criteria. It's, you know, like time to petition, number of people on the ballot, you know, signatures required, finances required. There's just a ton of little metrics, right? And the idea here is to target people in those states and get people in California and Texas and New York and Illinois and Georgia and the really bad states and get them to like start championing their states to change the ballot access laws. If you want to run as an independent in America, you need 1 million signatures for president and to get on the ballot in all 50 states. So that means you need about $25 million to get ballot access in all 50 states. And you have to have the infrastructure and the team in place, and you have to know every single rule in every single state. They're all different. It's totally ridiculous. And the two parties just collude to suppress anybody, right? If you're a Democrat or Republican, you basically are automatically on the ballot. You need 60,000 signatures across the entire United States. And whoever is the nominee basically just gets placed there, right? So there's no barrier to entry at all. And so this whole idea, what we were trying to do is, I had that success in Maine where we got ballot access restored for the Libertarian Party in Maine with basically the same group of people. Harrison Kemp out of Maine is now working on this. He was the chair of Maine. And So we had that success there, and we had the idea that there's maybe like 10, 12 states that sort of are low-hanging fruit that we can attack and get ballot access change. And I know Rhode Island right now is got legislation going through that's going to reduce ballot access. And then we're going to, you know, we're going to sue some states, we're going to lobby some states, and we're going to need a lot of grassroots activism to make this, you know, make this happen, basically. And then we added one more piece to it, which is there was a like a 50 or 100 page white paper from the National Harvard National Journal Review. I want to say that's what it was. But basically, they came up with what ideal ballot access would look like. So we've distilled that down into like a one page of what we think ballot access, if it was like fair and transparent and equal across the board, would look like. And so we're going to be pushing that as our ideal. And I really, you know, this is like, it's not in the party, but it's going to benefit the party. Right. Like, because I think ballot access is so crucial. And the idea here is that instead of paying every year or every cycle to get on the ballot in all these 50 states and the party spending $100,000 or $200,000 or $300,000, we can reduce the ballot access cost across the board, and we'll have dividends for, you know, decades to come. And it'll literally save us millions and millions of dollars down the road if we can get just some effect, some change in these states. And so I just, when I got done, I was kind of searching, like, what can I do to affect change that would really like make an impact? And, you know, I came up with a bunch of things inside the party, but I realized that, like, I didn't want to fight with everybody to get it done. Like, if people didn't like my idea, I might put a bunch of effort into it and then just have it shot down at a convention or something. Whereas I can go here, I can put my money in, I'm steering the ship, and I can affect change that is beneficial to the party, but outside the party. So anybody that wants to help with ballot access, feel free to donate to More Voter Choice. We'll put your money to good use. We're going to be lambasting social media, and then we're going to be suing these states, and lawyers cost money.
Fantastic. And that's
More Voter Choice.
Is it .org? .org.com?
It's on that sheet. It's morevoterchoicefund.org. On that sheet, there's a little QR code there.
There you go.
There's a little QR code.
So right, you know what? I'm going to leave that up for a couple of seconds so people can snap that QR code. And please listen, if you believe in what Lars is saying, that being able to do that, to be able to have a ballot access for third parties so that it makes it easier, so we're not constantly spending money on litigation, on getting efforts to go get signatures, going door to door. Thank you, Mr. Producer, for getting that up there. Our nimble-fingered producer gets the address up there right on time. Thanks to William there. Morevoterchoicefund.org. Yes. So, yeah, we definitely want folks to take a look at what Lars is saying here, because, listen, if you want to help, if you want to do it directly, if politics, political machinery isn't your thing, you're kind of put off and disgusted by the whole thing, this is a concrete way you can help. Donate whatever you can. Do you need volunteers for this effort, Lars? Can people sign up?
We're going to start standing that up pretty shortly. We literally just got the website up because we went to the Secretary of State convention, so we wanted to get that going. But we're going to be massaging the website and getting a good CRM in place to get people activated, because the thing is these laws come up all the time. Like, every week there's a law somewhere that's being rigged in some state. And so you need to have action from those people in those states. It's important for them, even just a few people calling their constituents and saying, I don't like AB 209. It suppresses people and it's unconstitutional and it's un-American. That goes a long way, you know? And so we're going to need activists all over the country to really push on this.
That sounds fantastic. Morevoterchoicefund.org. You get that? Please go there. Check it out. Lars, very quickly, have you heard of Cliff Maloney in Pennsylvania and the PA Chase? Is that something that you view as a viable model, if you're familiar with it?
I know Cliff, but I don't know what you're talking about.
Basically, it was that they targeted three or four states. This is Cliff Maloney now he calls it a liberty sort of a pursuit, but it actually functionally turned out being a Republican turnout in a lot of key states that they felt they could, by getting 20%, that they could affect change. And it worked in Pennsylvania, PHAs, and basically it was like getting volunteers to go door to door, but really targeting districts, targeting states. And, you know, when I interviewed him, he had like four states that he had. Pennsylvania was one of them. I'm struggling to remember what the other two were. Was it Iowa or Idaho? One of those two, I think.
He's a activist and a liberty leaning activist, but he's Republican. And but I mean, those are the, you know, and he's good at what he does. Those are, you know, same tactics the Democrats use, the get out the vote thing, though, you know, walk the, you know, there's, you know, all these, they have apps for your phone that literally will show you how the voter in this house voted. And you can like go up to them and like start chatting them up and like, no, oh, I'm not even going to knock that door because that door is hardcore Republican and I'm a Democrat, so I'm only doing these doors, you know. So they've got it down to a science with literally door-to-door knocking. So it's I think in this election cycle there was some pretty crazy freaking tactics, especially on the Republican side, to motivate and to change people's votes and to get coalitions. They worked for it, right? They worked for it. And the Democrats, they failed miserably. Like that whole, we're not having a primary, Biden's the appointed, anointed, whatever. And then, oh crap, we don't have him, so we're still not having a primary. We're just going to put this chick in here and you get this one. If you don't like it, tough crap. And I think a lot of Democrats were like, wait, what? Because the facade fell off, right? It's like, we all know that it's all corrupt and that your vote doesn't actually matter in the primary. It's two private corporations deciding who's going to be their candidate. It doesn't matter what you vote, but the Democrats just said it out loud the whole election cycle. And, you know, they're like, your vote doesn't count because, you know. And so I think a lot of people were like pissed off at that. And I think they just didn't show up to vote because they were just like, you know what? You guys are shady F's.
It was a PR nightmare. I've said that, and I'm no fan. I'm no Republican, no Democrat, but literally PR nightmare, even to the point where they turned down RFK. They could have had RFK in their camp for this election cycle. They didn't, which was a huge strategic failure. And even after they selected Harris, they could have cut a deal with RFK. Well, he went to them first.
Now, Harris thing, they were forced because she was the only one that had that $120 million. There was no way to give that $120 million to anybody else. And without that money, they only had so short a period of time that they wouldn't be able to re-raise it. So that was why they pushed her, is because she had the money. It was like it didn't matter who she was. It was literally like the vehicle for the money. Like, that's all it was. It was so right? Which just goes to show you what a farce and a charade our whole election thing is. It's like, it doesn't matter the person, you just need the $120 million behind them.
Right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this man ran under this campaign slogan, unrig the system. And if you didn't believe it then, you should believe it as a result of the 2024 election. Hody, sir, I don't want to leave you out of this. Give me your parting shots on this.
Sure. I'm just enjoying everything. Obviously, lots of work to do with the Libertarian Party. I hope they do it. I hope that the fractionalization of the LPMC proves to be the best. I hope that the racists, the bigots, the culture warriors, get left at home. And I hope that really the positive liberty activists kind of have had the scales shed from their eyes. And they kind of say, you know what, this isn't what we signed up for. You know, let's maybe stop repeating that, like, most relevant we've ever been when that person who said that just stole a bunch of money from us. That's their talking point. If the robber tells you this is the most relevant your house has ever been after stealing from your home, I wouldn't repeat that to the neighbors, you know, or brag about it with that. I do want to say, now that we got Lars on, one of the things that I always love is happy activism. Libertarians have been miserable activists forever. It usually goes nowhere. Those who read Blueprint for Revolution understand how joy is so important. We shouldn't just get joy out of victory. We should get joy out of doing the work. I don't mind, internally, don't mind losing if it means standing for what is right and standing with people who are great people in a great environment, great community. Lars is a big part of that. I always love his joy and happiness when he talks about these things, that there's a real plan, there's a real hope, there's a real vision there. It's not all misery, it's not all doom and gloom, it's not all, you know, let's get upset. People want to be guided by principle, but we are guided by emotion, all of us. You know, it's just, that's the human condition. And I would much rather toil and struggle for a maybe losing cause with people that I love and people who love me back and people who make me happy than win with people who make me miserable, people who are fighting for like really sad causes. So yeah. I know, Lars, I know that I had a friend who worked on your campaign, Tyler Harris, one of my best friends, and a lot of people that supported you. I was over with Chase. I've known him as a friend for forever and love his revolutionary spirit. But your joy and happiness that you bring in addition to all the work that you do, I think cannot be understated. We have many revolutionaries who are burnt out, angry, and it just goes nowhere. It's a well that runs dry. And I like that the refreshing joyousness to say, I can carry this on tomorrow. I'm excited to carry this on tomorrow, right? Like, and that's what kind of a Lars campaign gets me. And I'm excited to see that you're still involved and still doing good work, because we need a lot more of that.
Thank you.
And Lars, I'll give you one more chance. Plug your More Voter Choice Fund and anything else you would like to, sir.
Yeah. No, just that. I'm, you know, in the campaign, I talked about the Voters' Bill of Rights. The More Voter Choice kind of is the first piece of the Voters' Bill of Rights, which is ballot access. But there's four other pieces there for transparency and fixing our election system. So I stood up a second nonprofit called Voting Rights Foundation, which I don't have website or anything up yet. We're just still in the process of, like, you know, really getting it going. But right. The idea there is to just educate America about the Voters' Bill of Rights and see if we can get some change in America around transparency and integrity in our election system. I sat on the campaign trail, and I still wholly believe this, that whether you're a Democrat or Republican, majority of people don't trust our elections and don't think that they're run fairly. And until we get fairness and transparency in our election system, we have a fractured republic. We have a republic that is in decline. And the only way that I see that coming, there was a statistic, something, it was like 1 in 5 Americans believe that violence is going to be the solution to this problem. And I don't want to see any more BLM riots. I don't want to see any more January 6th stuff, because it's basically disenfranchised people that feel their voice isn't being heard. And the only outlet that they feel like they have is violence. And if we continue down that path, you know, one of the greatest wars for death in American history is the Civil War. And I don't want to go back to that, right? I don't want to go back to that ever again, right? And so we have to get the integrity restored into our election system. And that's really what I'm trying to do with both of these things.
Fantastic. And that's certainly a sentiment I think at least the people on this episode can agree on. All right, everyone, thank you for joining us tonight for Free For All. We're here every Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Come check me out. Lars, thank you for joining us, sir. You could also follow Lars on X, @LibertarianLars on X. My co-host down there, Hody, can be found @TheHodeMan on X. And me, I'm Big John. You know me because I'm pretty overweight and sedentary these days. But until next time, peace, everyone.